This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
This is World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show, taking you around the globe, one country at a time. Tonight you have Paul on the panel.
Hello.
And the women of World Wide Wave, Barbara.
Hello.
And myself, Lana. Tonight we are acknowledging International Women's Day. Each year on March 8th, we acknowledge and celebrate the political and social achievements of women. Tonight on World Wide Wave, we speak to Joan Nessel, a worldly woman, an elder of the queer community, lesbian, and oh so much more. And we chat about history in its many forms.
We ask the questions, what does International Women's Day mean and why is it important? Why is acknowledging being working class important, and what role does it play in International Women's Day? What does being political mean as a woman and as a lesbian? To understand International Women's Day from a queer perspective, we spoke to Joan Nessel, author and editor of many books, including the latest, Sinister Wisdom, Lesbians and Exile. And here's a taste of what we have in for tonight.
You know, my mother was a bookkeeper in the garment industry in New York City. She went to work when she was 14 years old and never stopped till she died. But and one of the first things she showed me was the site of the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, and that was the starting point for the first International Women's Day march in New York City.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
And we're starting in Zimbabwe, where it has been stated that the anti-gay laws are hurting the fight to stop HIV and AIDS. And what happened was that the director of the Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe, Chesterfield Samba, he has urged the government to revise the anti-gay laws that stop necessary discussions into urgent health issues. And speaking Zimbabwe, we all know Robert Mugabe is saying all sorts of nasty things about gay people there. And
yeah, we have to realise that there's an estimated 15% of the entire country are living with HIV, but Zimbabwe can't control the HIV and AIDS if it continues to discriminate against LGBTI people. So it's a real issue there.
And as long as the government does not get engaged on issues of key populations, then there will be challenges later on that getting completely out of control. And so hopefully Mr. Mugabe has an ear for that. There was a program suggested last year in December when the government considered an anti-HIV program for LGBTI sex workers, and it had the support of the head of the AIDS and Tuberculosis Unit in the Ministry of Health. So hopefully something's happening there. If you are interested in Zimbabwe, we also did a show on that about a year ago. So if you look on our podcast site into the March 2014 shows, then you will find something on Zimbabwe there.
Yeah. And off to the UK, where students aren't being taught about HIV. In a new UK study, it's found that 3/4 of 14 to 19-year-old gay students have not been given any advice about navigating adult same-sex relationships. A third have also said that they're not being taught about HIV and safer sex, with many unaware of how the virus is actually transmitted. The National AIDS Trust, who surveyed 1,000 teens, said the lack of proper education was likely fueling the rise in young men contracting HIV.
It sounds like the sex education hasn't improved since I was there.
We kind of didn't actually have sex ed. I went to a private girls' school. We had education about how our bodies worked, but we didn't really have education around safe sex.
We had how you did it in the hetero
heteronormative sex education.
Yes. Yeah. There was no reference to homosexuality, gays, lesbians, because at that time there was only LNG anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't really remember being told about HIV at school. I went to a Catholic girls' school, so the whole sex education thing was pretty ridiculous anyway, because you sit between 25 giggling girls, whilst that was actually a male teacher, which probably didn't make it any easier for him, tried to explain certain things, and he was just constantly flushing red.
Yeah.
Flushing, and that wasn't.
Yeah. Also, really good. What really disturbs me about this report as well is that one in five students surveyed said they'd been bullied by a teacher for being gay. Now, high school for me was incredibly terrible being bullied for. I didn't even realise I was a lesbian, but I was still being bullied as a lesbian because I was not liking boys and sometimes getting flushed looking at girls.
I had the same problem because I wasn't particularly good at sport. I was a fat little, fat tall kid. So I was bullied as a puff.
So, I think it's even worse when you've got teachers bullying and one in five students saying that the teachers are bullying.
Basically 39% say that a teacher or another adult at the school has been responsible for the bullying, and I think that's an outrageous number.
Absolute outrage.
Over to Ireland where, things are happening now. We have a few stories about Ireland today, and the first one is that a referee was banned from wearing a rainbow wristband. So he had correctly asked the Gaelic Football Association if he could wear it, and they refused because of the referendum that's just around the door, and they thought that would be too political and they don't want him to.
We probably should fill in a bit of a background that Ireland is about to have or will soon have a referendum on equal marriage.
The referendum's on May 22nd. It's really heating up there. It's very promising that marriage equality will get through. It's not done and dusted deal, but it looks very promising. And I think that's quite interesting. It's considered a political symbol. Of course it's a political symbol. It's a political issue and it's a big one. But when you can't wear a rainbow band on your arm, that's a bit of an issue.
Yeah, so the campaign has kicked off, but at the same time, in a radio interview, a Catholic bishop stated that a homosexuality equates to the Down syndrome, which, I was quite...
It's getting back to the being a medical...
The pathologisation. I think that what worse than that is that it's not just pathologising. The way in which people and society considers Down syndrome is one in which it's not just about a medical condition, but one where we don't have our clear faculties, and it's just appalling. Oh.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is Douglas.
And this is Paula.
From Kaleidoscope Australia Human Rights Foundation, keeping a watchful eye on LGBTI rights across Asia and the Pacific.
On the World Wide Wave.
If you want to know more about what's happening around the world with our Worldwide Wrap, because we rambled on a bit there and didn't get quite all the way around the world, you can check us out on our Facebook at W3Joy. That's W3Joy. And we have lots of more articles up there for you.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
So we are talking about International Women's Day today, and we thought we'd talk a little bit more about what that actually is for the people who might not have listened to Lana's show about International Women's Day on the day.
I didn't really explain what International Women's Day was. Last year, my show for International Women's Day was a political history of International Women's Day. But this year, it was just about listening to women. So we're going to talk about what it actually is.
So actually, it was originally called the International Working Women's Day, and it is now celebrated every year on March the 8th.
In different regions, focus on the celebration ranges in general celebration of respect, appreciation and love towards women to a celebration for women's economic, political and social achievements.
It started out as a socialist political event, but then the holiday blended the culture of many countries, primarily in Europe and especially in those of the Soviet bloc.
In some regions, the day lost its political favour and became simply an occasion for people to express their love for women in a way somewhat similar to a mixture of Mother's Day and Valentine's Day.
But in other regions, however, the political and human rights theme runs strong, and political and social awareness of the struggles of women worldwide are brought out and examined in a hopeful manner. Some people celebrate the day by wearing purple ribbons.
Same-sex sexual activity for women remains illegal in 50 countries internationally, while LGBT women often face an increase of sexual violence. Trans women in particular face high levels of murder around the world.
Now, I know that there's been a factor that you brought into this program several times about the difference in the legal system between male same-sex
activity
and
female same-sex sex sexual activity.
Because a lot
activity.
Of the places, it's not even wasn't not even recognised as a crime.
Yeah. Progress has been made internationally. We know that lesbians, bisexual and trans women experience high levels of inequality and violence, though.
So Mina Tolu of the International LGBTIQ Youth and Student Organisation says on the topic, we believe that in order to comprehensively address violence, discrimination and oppression women of all kinds experience, we must adopt an intersectional approach and policies that support all women and girls who might face and experience multiple oppressions in their daily lives.
They go on to say, we at GLYO, the International Gay Lesbian Youth Organisation, stress that particular needs and challenges of young lesbian, bisexual, trans and queer women, girls and individuals identifying as queer or feminine who are at an increased risk of being bullied, and this causes dropouts and increases the chance of mental health problems that lead to suicidal thoughts.
And furthermore, these individuals are more exposed to violence and physical assault. Governments must gear policies that ensure the safety of young LGBTQ individuals whose concerns are too often neglected in the national human rights strategies.
I really tried to focus on the weekend on that intersectional nature of queer women and what that means. And, you know, being a woman, for me, myself, I identify as a lesbian, I identify as femme, I identify as a person of colour, and where those intersectionalities lay, but also acknowledging all the other women, all the other diverse women that we have around, trans women, and what that means, and the kinds of violence that happens to trans women, which is quite horrific internationally, as well as in our own home, in our own backyards. Women who are women with disabilities. I had one young woman who I interviewed, and what I really remember from her interview was that she talked about how people always feel like they should go up to her and say, what's wrong with you? And I just, that's so challenging, right? And it was really interesting because she said, you know, why don't they ask me if I why I have red spiky hair? And she said, it's because I'm a dyke, okay? And really kind of, you know, yeah, go get them. It was really interesting to talk to Kath, who was a woman with HIV, and what her experiences were like, and how even reporting for HIV isn't reported for women in isn't reported for women because we're not seen as particularly a group of people that will get HIV. However, internationally, women are actually the face of HIV, which is really interesting, and I didn't know that.
Do you think that there will be a change in attitude now that Rosie Batty and domestic violence has raised its profile?
I don't necessarily think so. I think that obviously we're seeing some effects happening. Like, for example, in Queensland with the new government, first thing they're putting in is some more family violence support services. However, I think it ebbs and flows. If you look at the kinds of support services that were available in the 70s and 80s, particularly run by feminists and lesbians and women, you know, that kind of support service and that kind of women's solidarity was there, and it dropped off.
A little less straight than other radio stations. Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Worldwide Wave, taking you around the globe one country at a time. And tonight we have a very special International Women's Day broadcast where I got to interview someone who is a bit of a hero or a shiro to me, someone who is just quite amazing. But she's an elder in our community, and I think we really need to take stock and pay respect to our elders and learn from our histories. I'm talking about Joan Nessel. Now, Joan is an elder of the lesbian and queer community. She's one of the people who started the Gay and Lesbian Academics Union in America and the Lesbian Herstory Archives, which is now the largest lesbian archives in the world. I recently spoke to Joan about her life and what International Women's Day means for her.
You know, I want to start by sort of breaking a spell in a way, because International Women's Day was not always important to me. You remember, I mean, I came out in the 50s and as a queer femme in working class bars, and I was working since I was 13. I did not have an international sense at all. I just had a sense of daily survival. So I'm really grateful for knowing that I was going to speak to you, because since I've been, of course, as an adult and entering feminism in the late 60s and 70s, and then living with Di Otto, my Australian partner for these last wonderful 17 years, who's an international human rights teacher, sharer, inspirer, I have become much more familiar with this long and incredibly brave history of women peace activists and socialist peace activists, many of whom were lesbians. So I just wanted to start out. I have to educate myself all the time about the history of things, and including where my own history has failed me and where it has given me clues, you know?
You mentioned that your part, or you came from a working-class butch femme bar culture.
Yes.
For our listeners, I want you to explain what butch and femme is.
It's probably not the way to start. I have all kinds of other things to talk about, because it's a very complex thing, and it changes over time. It isn't a historical thing. But when I came out in the bars in the 50s, there was an erotic, developed play and commitment that played with gender performance and gender selves that allowed complexity. And, you know, the 50s in America, and I would assume here as well, were not particularly welcoming to complexities of any time. So in the working class bars, and this has been going back to the 20s, the erotic play that happened took the form of what we called femme and butch. And to the outside world, and this is where I've been sort of taking on this task of deconstructing this concept that, oh, they were you were imitating heterosexual roles. No, it was a very developed erotic stance that allowed, how can I say, there to be more than two sexes in one woman's body, and allowed for erotic competencies which not even straight women were finding in those days. So it also allowed for economic structures. So the butch woman, who often refused to wear any women's clothing, often had to be supported in some ways by her femme partner, who could pass, and this was a prevalence in the working class bars of jobs like taxi driver and stock clerk and jobs where gender could be confused. This is too big a topic to go into now, but one of the important things about International Women's Day is that at this time, one of the real added richnesses queers like myself, and I use that as an inclusive word, like the word lesbian is an inclusive word of bisexual and trans and things, can give is the insight into gender rigidities do not make for peace, they do not make for economic, political, and social reforms, they do not even make for reality, but they do make for war. They do make for war.
Hello, this is Wolfgang from Conchita Wurst City, which is Vienna in Austria. You're listening to Worldwide Wave from Joy 94.9.
Today our show is about International Women's Day, and we spoke to Jo Nessel, the co-founder of the Lesbian Her Story Archives. And if you listened to the first part of the interview, you heard that Joan mentioned the word working class a few times. And so we asked her in the interview, what does that mean to you? Why does she identify as working class?
To be working class, I would say, means learning how to pass, learning how to keep one's inner self alive in the face of middle class control over most things. To be working class means never to assume anything. For instance, we were evicted many times in my growing up life because my mother couldn't pay the rent. I never knew my father died before I was born. It means life for me. Now one thing I want to say, and all our conversations, Lana, is that none of this should be taken as sweeping statements of truth for anybody. So I hope your listeners, will interrogate what I say and say, well, you know, I'm working class, but that wasn't my experience. So for some, being working class means living in the same house all, you know, your growing up years, because that was the center of security. For me, it meant coming home and finding neighbors standing around the door with the eviction notice that was hammered into the door the way they did it in the Bronx and in the 50s and 40s. So it means living, it meant never assuming education, never assuming health care, never assuming that my mother would be home, never assuming she wouldn't, that safety, never assuming safety, and learning at a very early age how to take care of myself. And for me, the thing that saved me was school, and many people have said that. And I've only been to, now this is American language, public schools, which means free education, and all the way up to university. So, but school was the one place I felt safe, ironically.
It's been recorded that you see your work of archiving history as critical to your identity as a woman, as a lesbian, and as a Jew. Can you explain that statement?
Yes, but again, I'll try to avoid some cliches about it. I think when you're a marginal, or when you're part of marginalized communities, which I've always felt a very rich experience, so whether it's, again, in those bars in the 50s, or being a Jew, not, and things are changing a little, I have to say, for all of this, but in the past, or being, the daughter of a mother who turned tricks sometimes to raise rent money, anything that pushes you to the periphery, it puts a demand on your memory, because you get all kinds of bribes to devalue those marginal places of extreme knowledge. But I, as a writer, almost knew from the beginning that I had to remember the kinds of courages I was seeing, the kinds of touch that people were sacrificing so much to be able to give and take. I was part of the Anti-House Un-American Activities Committee movement in the late 50s, early 60s, so the kind of courage it took to be a communist in the 50s. For me, so I don't want to say it isn't memory in the service of a particular people, but it's memory knowing, in a way, for me to say thank you. I never would have survived my life without remembering those who gave me life. It would be very cheap survival. And that leads me now, for instance, my current, and this has to do with Wilf as well, because one of the early things that Wilf did in the First World War was they'd had vigils. It was, and women would wear black, and they were mourning vigils for the war. And I'm part of Women in Black that stands this to this very time in Melbourne against, in this case, it's against the Israeli occupation of Palestine. So, to be a dissenter and to remember those who came before that way is crucial. It's crucial to have, it's crucial if you're trying to imagine a different kind of world.
You're listening to World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9, and that was part two of an interview with Joan Nessel, and all I have to say is wow.
Yeah, she's a pretty amazing woman.
Yeah.
And the stuff she talks about, it really gives you goosebumps, like what she was told by her mom, that she, like, that she actually was at that site where the first International Women's Day pretty much sort of goes back to.
In New York City,
those protests,
yeah.
Like, that's history full on.
It is. It is history. And the way in which Joan has lived her life is one in which I really hope to achieve, in that it feels to me like she lives her life with integrity, you know, being who she is and just going forward with that. You know, Joan is someone who did the Selma to Montgomery march. Joan is someone who started the was one of the founders of the first gay and lesbian academics union in the US, you know, one of the co-founders of the Lesbian Herstory Archives, which, you know, was in her house for many, many years.
Yeah, you can tell by listening to the interview that she's a very strong woman, and just when she reflects back to her upbringing, like, that pretty much, yeah, there was nothing to expect from her surrounding or in her situation, and she had to pretty much go and run with it and get the best what she can do with this very small or things. I think have changed so much. We take it for granted that we have a good school education system, health system, all these things we take for granted. There's people who look after our children when we have to go to work, and all that was not existing at that time.
No.
Like, the kids had to look after themselves.
And in some places it still doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and even some places in Australia too, I think. We have to acknowledge that, you know, we live in cities and we can access some of those things. Mm. And I'm sure that it's a lot harder for other people. You know, poor working women, poor women, Indigenous women out in remote communities, for example, migrant women who are here, like, as a refugee, when you get here, you know, you don't even get a full Centrelink payment, which is below the poverty line. A Centrelink payment is below the poverty line anyway.
And then there's the women that don't actually make it here that are being processed offshore.
Yes, absolutely. You know, we do have a lot to go. And it's quite interesting for International Women's Day. When I look back the 100-plus years where International Women's Day actually started as International Working Women's Day, and the kinds of things that they were protesting and fighting for were reproductive rights, were, you know, rights for childcare,
well, the right,
were equal pay.
The right to vote.
You know, well, we can vote now here, but, you know, I think that childcare, equal pay, reproductive rights, we're still fighting for those things. So
there's still some room to go. There's still some glass ceilings to break through.
I read an article the other day where somebody was sort of asking the question, do we still need International Women's Day? Haven't we achieved everything? And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, this is Janne, Mr. Gay Finland, and you are listening on the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Tonight we are having a special International Women's Day broadcast. I got to interview Joan Nessel. Now, Joan uses a lot of identities and highlights the marginalised nature of those identities. She brings to the forefront the political issues, and I asked Joan, what does being political mean to you as a woman and as a lesbian, and how Joan would identify herself?
It's political. I was involved in the civil rights movement, in the anti-war movement. I mean, as a working class young woman, I never traveled. I never had money to travel. I really didn't know many histories. And part of that, I didn't know the history, even though I was a peace activist in the, you know, anti-Vietnam War and all of that. I really didn't know my histories. And it's only since I would say maybe the 80s when I started being active in international groups, and that I almost had a feeling, until I was educated, that some of these movements were homophobic, and at times they were. All, unfortunately, political movements have their own narrow-mindedness, and the left is part of that at times. But I would say since the 80s it came crashing in on me that around the world, issues of economic and social and political justice, which had queer people all the time, like Bayard Rustin working, and Eleanor Roosevelt, who was bisexual, and I mean, there was a long history of women working together. They didn't use the same names I use, and they had relationships in Boston marriages, different kinds of ways, but yes, that we were always part of activist movements. And one of the big things, particularly for women in black, which is a reincarnation of Wilf, or parallel in reincarnation, is that, for instance, when the women in black stand in Israel, they get called two things, dykes and whores. And that's why many of the women who stand in Israel and all over the world in women in black want to come out and say, yes, we are lesbians. And I have to say that for me, the other part, that the women's movement is still, I think there are still sex and gender issues that have to be incorporated into International Women's Day thinking, and one of them for me is including sex worker rights in our movements. That has been a hard one.
So what does International Women's Day mean for you today?
Today, it means to take a really heartbreaking look at the world around us. And one of the things I have in front of me is a newspaper from today, The Age, which was all about war games and a $1 million fighter helmet that makes the pilot like God. And the this is to me what it means today, as I think of those women, those early women who risked their lives and gave their lives for peace, that there's going to be soldiers, tanks, and aircraft will reenact famous battles. And how did we get a time of endless war? So it means, one, it means I can truly say this at 75, that no matter where I've lived my histories, as a woman, as a queer, as a Jew, I am part of that which is called woman around the world, which in so many cases is still the mule of work, is still the enslaved, and is also still the deepest resistance fighters, each within their own culture. So now, today, it means today it means a great sense of wanting to honor by continued anti-war political work. And anti-war work is about as queer as anything, because war is the greatest consumer of all. So I guess it means everything that is worth fighting for now. And in my head, it's an inclusive struggle.
You're listening to Joy 94.9. That was Joan Nessel, part three of the interview for a very special International Women's Day on World Wide Wave. Barbara, I want to ask you, as a woman, as a lesbian, what does International Women's Day mean for you?
For me, it means that we still have a long way to go, and there's still a lot of injustice that we as women face. And then again, as lesbians within the women community, that's a different cup again. We're not there yet. There's a lot to go through.
I found it really interesting. But then again, I think because I am politically aligned with Joan, and so in the way in which she explores what being queer to her means really opens the door to be able to explore what being a woman and what being political means.
I was just wondering, did your workplaces celebrate International Women's Day?
I got one email so I work for a university here, and they're usually a bit aware of these things. So there was an event, I think, today.
I work for the state government, and my particular department put on event for the women to...
A lovely little lunch with a bit of, dare I say, scones and tea?
I believe so. I didn't actually attend, but they did have speakers, including a deputy secretary and a secretary that were women.
Yeah. Awesome. You didn't ask me.
I did.
I'm a poet. I don't have a
It was an open question.
So did you call a meeting with yourself?
Well, International Women's Day, I was here and I did the special broadcasts, which was really interesting. And another thing that I find really interesting, and the one thing that I didn't hit with International Women's Day, was sex worker rights. So next year.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
It's Romana Schlesinger from the Rainbow Pride Bratislava in Slovakia for World Wide Wave.
We want to put a special thanks out there to Joan Nessel, the author and elder of the queer community, co-founder of the Lesbian Her Story Archive, and so much more that we had the pleasure of interviewing. We also got a few messages over the week, like, for example, from Sarah in the show, who said that it's really important to talk about transgender issues because there are so many people that we lose in the transgender community. We also had Greg interacting with us on Facebook. So if you want to hit our Facebook page, W3Joy.
And we'd like to say thank you to Gordon on the front desk.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.